The date is January 29th, 1964, and we are watching Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
I love it. Oh, that was so charming. Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, or I Used to Hate This One, the show where we take a look back at movies that, well, we couldn't stand when we were younger, but we're giving them a second shot. This is our special June series that we have going on, and I'm not on this mission alone. With me is the Brigadier General Jack D. Ripper to my group captain Lionel Mandrake.
Hello, all you Ruskies. I'm Aaron Knowles.
yes, the longest title we've done yet. We've done Buckaroo Banzai, but I think this one outdoes Buckaroo Banzai. Because that one is officially like The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. Or...
I'm not counting characters. That's time is money. Time is money.
Time is money. Well, let's get to it. So this week we're looking back at January 1964 when the movies and theaters were, get ready for a couple of movies you've probably never heard of. Bunny Yeager's Nude Las Vegas.
Wow.
Wow, yeah. Dr. Sachs. I mean, isn't this also the same year as Doctor No? Is it a coincidence?
Year of the Doctors. Dr. Sex and...
That's right, Doctor Strangelove.
Very medical heavy year.
Yeah, Sleep, which is a movie I have actually seen parts of. It's an Andy Warhol movie where he just films someone sleeping for 5 hours.
Andy Warhol is a weird dude.
Yeah, an Andy Warhol exhibit came through our art gallery here, and I went and checked it out. And yeah, in one of the rooms they had Sleep playing, and it's like, yep, it's just some guy sleeping. One I have heard of, A Fistful of Dollars, and of course, our movie for today, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, which earned $9.5 million on a $1.8 million budget. I took it to the conversion calculator, Aaron. That's $92.5 million on a $17.5 million budget.
Jeez.
Yeah, and apparently $1 million of that less than $2 million apparently was Peter Sellers' salary.
Jesus. Good job, Pete. I mean, he did play three characters.
Yes, that's impressive. That is a feat.
Yes. Six of them.
Yeah. What, one of them I didn't even realize was him until the end.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Like none of his were the same. I'm like, I was actually looking for him, and I was like, where is he? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and this is also now the oldest movie I've ever had on this show.
Oh.
Yeah.
I love the fact that I'm popping so many of your cinematic cherries.
My podcast cherries as well, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Busting your chops and popping your cherries. You're welcome.
And bringing a pretty rad radio guy voice, I gotta say.
Thank you.
The date is, yeah, that was a very good, yeah.
So, spoilers ahead, just FYI, for those of you who decide, why shouldn't I watch a movie that was obviously written by a guy on every drug known to man at the time? So, you know, 40 plus years ago, I mean, I'm not even doing the
60. 60 years.
Oh my God, I'm so old. 60 plus years ago, man. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an old movie.
That's and it's like, to be honest, it doesn't even feel like it's that. It feels
not too bad. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not one that I would watch and be like, man, this is like, you know, out of its element or out of its time. Mm-hmm. It definitely kind of feels still relevant, doesn't it?
Yeah. A little bit. Yeah.
Which is wild.
Yeah. It does, yeah. Yeah, well, okay, here we go. Taglines. I mean, 1964, this is a whole different world for taglines. The first one, the comedy classic from celebrated director Stanley Kubrick.
It's a bit on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems obvious. Second one, the red-hot suspense story that's rocking and shocking the world. Maybe I should have said that with more excitement. It does end in an exclamation point. But...
dare you undersell that one.
The red hot suspense story that's rocking and shocking the world.
I think that was too much because like somebody in the 60s who was listening to the radio, because there probably wasn't, you know, very many televisions. Somebody's watching like, oh, my word.
My word.
They certainly are offensive on the radio this evening.
It's rocking and shocking.
Wow.
Jeez.
Cover your ears, kids.
Well, see, okay, now, have you ever watched Wheel of Fortune?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. I've reached the age where I'm like, I love a good game show.
Vanna White is still so beautiful. But
she absolutely is.
When you look at some of the puzzles on that show, do you ever get, like, a sound in your head and everything feels like it should be that and you can't sound it out? You're looking at it and you're like... Okay, so I think the guys writing these taglines got the word hot in their head. Because here's the next two. These are the last two. The third one, the Wild Hotline Suspense Comedy.
Okay.
And the fourth one, the Hotline Suspense Comedy. So no longer wild. It's just the Hotline Suspense Comedy. They're just like, well, we got to do something with hot. For some reason, they were obsessed with hot with these last ones. We've got a red hot suspense. We've got a wild hot suspense, and just a hotline suspense. Yeah. I don't know. 1964, do better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Stanley Kubrick, do better.
You hack.
You crazy goof.
You'll never amount to anything.
Nothing.
Well, those may not be very good descriptions of this movie. I mean, just lets you know that everything is, like, hot. But let's go to Aaron and get a line. Let's go to Aaron and get a 60-second synopsis.
Are you ready for this one?
Yeah, I can't wait.
I had fun with this one.
Are you doing a radio voice for this one?
No, it would be too long for that. You'd probably get, like, annoying or something at that
point.
You're like,
that movie title was long enough.
Okay, here we go.
Okay.
Doctor Strange. Love. And the longest title to ever exist, but don't quote me on that, or How I Learned to Love the Word Commie, is all about, well, commies. Just kidding. This satirical thinker... is about a high-level U.S. military officer decides because of his current lapse in sanity that it is the best idea to launch a full-fledged Order 66 on the Ruskies with every thermonuclear device that the United States has in its arsenal. Not only do we hear from this nutty guy about how his fluids are being tampered with by the Russians, but we follow the story of the crew of one of the airplanes carrying a couple of nukes into enemy territory. Russians, commies, side chicks, and nuclear bombs. That famous scene with the guy waving a cowboy hat and riding the bomb till it hits came from this movie. Don't know what I'm talking about? That's probably because you were born 40-plus years too damn late. In the end, there is a shootout, a nuclear explosion, a Nazi scientist with an arm that has a mind of its own, random-ass comedy looking at you, Coke Machine, and the really understanding the men are just disgusting pigs that will use nothing short of a nuclear holocaust to mix it up with more than one lady at the same time.
You don't want to mess with the Coca-Cola Corporation.
You'll be answering to the Coke Company.
Love it. Nice. To your opening, I will say, I think I found one that's longer. Don't be a menace to South Central while drinking your juice in the hood, I believe is 14 words long, whereas this one is a measly 13 words long. Jeez. What about the Harley Quinn one, the Birds of Prey or the Emancipation of One Harley Quinn? I think that one's under 13.
This isn't a competition. This movie came out way before any of
that's
those.
True. Yeah. Those ones were just trying to outdo this one.
In an age of one-word, two-word movie titles, we got this 13-worded monstrosity.
Yeah, this isn't Dr. Sex. This is Dr. Strangelove.
This isn't Sleep. This is Dr. Strangelove.
That's right. Well, so this is one that I brung forth because I... hated this movie. Now, there was a point when I was in my mid-teens, later teens, when I wanted to be a cinephile.
you know, I wanted to go back and appreciate all the...
You can see it.
All the art that
You've got a good squinty face for that, yeah? You know?
Yeah. Well, I do now. But, you know, at the time, it was... That's what I wanted to do, right? And so Stanley Kubrick was one of those directors that it's like, I need to go watch his things. And, like, I didn't like his things.
Yeah.
And I've made that well documented on this show that I do not like Stanley Kubrick. However, being a naive mid-teenager, I will say I approached this movie not really realizing it was a comedy.
Mm-hmm. Or I could see that.
Or at least not understanding satire comedy at the time. And so, unfairly, I think I shelved this movie and said, nope, never again. That was fucking stupid. I hated it. I like Peter Sellers because I liked the Pink Panther. That was one that my parents introduced me to at a young age. Those ones are probably very problematic these days. But... Yeah, this is one where it's like, I want to, you know, I'm like, oh, it's got Peter Sellers in it. It can't be, it's got that guy from Patton, because, of course, Patton was another one that was on my cinephile list.
Mm-hmm, yep.
So I always just said, nope, that was stupid. We'll never watch it again. And here I am, you know, 30 years later watching it again. So whatever, that's my history with Dr. Strangelove, or how I learned to... Stop worrying and love the bomb.
Right. Yeah, for me, okay. So I won't ever say that I was really like a cinephile or had, you know, the idea to become a cinephile. For me, it was more, I did take some, you know, intro to film classes. I did take some films where it's like appreciating, you know, cinematic art and basically, you know, like watching some classics and like, you know, kind of comparing them to their remakes, the usual, like, you know, surface level college classes that you take sometimes.
Yeah. You watch a Scorsese film or a Tarantino film and think that you're some genius because you watch that and explain something about it. Yeah. Okay.
But I had a friend, he's still my friend. His name's Scott Cahill, and we were stationed in Germany. My first unit, first duty station. And this guy, for being roughly 20, 21, around that age, this guy is what I would call a low-key cinephile, because he was really into an 18, 19-year-old guy in the Army would consider, like, weird films. You know, Eraserhead, Doctor Strangelove, SLC Punk.
I love SLC Punk.
Yeah.
Oh, that one's so good. Suicide Kings.
Yep.
For
me, like, the first kind of exposure to movies like that were from my friend, and I really didn't understand. I didn't watch them because they didn't appeal to me. I was a young guy. You know, I wanted to see the Fast and the Furious, or I wanted to see whatever. I wanted to see these action
Mummy
films.
Yeah. Okay.
Whereas now... Like, again, I won't say that I dislike them. I really didn't. The look didn't draw me in at all. So I can't really say that I never used to like it, but I will say it wasn't something that I went after to watch. Mm-hmm. And so, but I was aware of it, and I knew that it was a popular thing. It had, you know, it's one of those cult followings. And I will say, like, I was very, like, not put off by it, but I was definitely like I enjoyed every, like, as we went into it, as I watched it, I'm like, this is not bad.
Yeah.
You know, I get it. I think that's what I would say as my experience with the movie for seeing it, I get it.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, it still feels relevant.
Yeah. But is a first viewing for you.
Yes. But more on that once we go through the movie. More on that. I will talk about how, you know, my experience and, like, my takeaway from this film. But I will say this, going into this review of this movie, I will say that I was really pleasantly surprised with the weirdness of this film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially considering, I mean, you know, I was about to say, especially considering the year it came out, but to think but to think that Sleep was also out, I mean, that's very, like, avant-garde and bizarre as
Dr.
well.
Dr. Sex.
So, Dr. Sex, whatever. Another the fuck
hot
that is.
a wild hotline.
Whatever that Dr. Yeager's nude Las Vegas is, too. I mean, maybe I should have done some extra credit research on some of
these. I've been to Vegas. I've never seen that establishment.
No Bunny Yeager's establishment kicking around that you know, not sitting next to Coyote Ugly or something like that?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, okay.
Sadly.
Well, I mean, do you have anything else to say about your history with this, or let's just jump in?
Let's jump in.
Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Enjoy the Bomb. And Love the Bomb. Fuck.
Love it.
I'm going to mix it up too many times.
Love that bomb.
Directed by Stanley Kubrick, produced by Stanley Kubrick, and written by Stanley Kubrick, plus Terry Southern and Peter George, which is based on a book, Red Alert. Apparently the book Red Alert is a serious book, and Stanley Kubrick's like, fuck that, like he said with The Shining. I'm going to make this a satire instead, because I don't think the book is as satirical as this one, or at least as funny.
He just said, let's get fucking weird with it.
Yeah, a little bit.
Let's get
weird. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, opens up with the disclaimer of it is the state of position of the U.S. Air Force that their safeguards would prevent the occurrence of such events as are depicted in this film. Furthermore, it should be noted that none of the characters portrayed in this film are meant to represent any real person's living or death. I mean, that's a pretty big statement to put right on the front of your film, where it's like, okay, no, someone made me put that on the front of this. Maybe.
Yeah. That was
definitely some
government oversight there, which we'll talk more about some of that with like the sets and such. But everything that went into this film, it just seemed like, especially when you have a satirical film that starts off with such a, like, I would even call it almost a gag order. You know, they made them put that on there so that nothing slipped out.
A little bit.
But
That's the cover your ass right there on the beginning.
Yeah, that's the government taking over.
That absolutely is. Yeah. Yeah, I did read something about this where the second unit was out filming over Greenland.
Mm-hmm.
And they accidentally found an actual U.S. Air Force base.
Yep.
And they were forced down and, detained for a little while.
Suspected of being Soviet spies.
Yes. Which, I mean, like, how ironic.
Which is funny because it's not even the only thing that occurred. And when I was saying about, like, you know, some of the other secrets, like, one thing that occurred during this movie was they used, like, pictures from, like, the websites. They used pictures from, like, you know, like newspapers.
Microfiche. Or microfiche, whatever it is. Yeah.
And basically they used that. So in 1960s, basically, the B-52 bomber was, like, at that time, it was the cutting edge in like, technology for, you know, bombing aircraft.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was the stealth of the time.
Yeah. And so the Pentagon refused to lend any support to the film. And set designers reconstructed the bomber's cockpit from one single photograph that was in a British magazine. And they did such a good job that when Air Force personnel were actually on set, they said that it looked exactly like the real thing. And so Stanley Kubrick feared that they were going to get, like, investigated by the FBI because of how, like, close and how detailed it was.
That's so crazy.
Yeah.
I mean... You know, you think about, like, if you've ever seen any of these shows where someone has recreated, like, you know, the bridge of the Enterprise.
In their basement.
Friend's apartment. Yeah, it's like that's their man cave is, like, the friend's apartment or something.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing.
You
just need to look at enough pictures. But, like, to think that off of one, it's like... How stupid does that magazine feel now?
Yeah. Well, have you ever wanted to, like, take, like, a room in your house and, like, make it into, like, a fake, you know, spacecraft cockpit?
Oh, always. I mean, I have, you know, anything.
I'm so glad I'm not alone in that.
I've always, I mean, you wouldn't believe some of the dream houses I dreamed up when I was younger. I was going to live in a biodome at one point when I was grown up.
Missile silo. That's where I always wanted to live.
That one's a cool one too.
Yeah. So speaking of missile silos, let's get into the cast. How about that?
Okay. Let's talk about the cast. Yeah. Cause, I mean, I guess there's two less people in this movie than there would normally have been if you had cast it like a normal movie.
Exactly. There's, I mean, some of these people were as we go through it, you're going to see there's some interesting people that I never knew would have been in this film. Peter Sellers, as you said, who's played like the Pink Panther. He was group captain.
Inspector Clouseau.
Clouseau. Yeah. Group captain Lionel Mandrake was Peter Sellers. Yeah. President Merkin Muffley.
Merkin. I mean, you know what a Merkin is, right?
I don't know what a Merkin is.
Oh, it is a. It's a toupee that is used for pubes. It's to enhance your pubic region.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was something that was very popular in, like, you know, French Revolution times kind of thing, Merkins. Yeah. I believe there's also chest Merkins if you want to have a hairier chest. Yeah, but it's for body hair. It's toupee for body hair.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, obviously, I mean, I don't know, but
I mean, Muffly.
Pubic hair. So it's basically pubic hair. And then Dr. Strangelove.
Remus Lupin. Wolf.
So Dr. Strangelove was just...
Dr. Strangelove, I have questions about. Yeah. I mean... Yeah.
I don't know. Like, there's... Okay, so, like, earlier I mentioned Dr. Strangelove having the arm that kind of had a life of its own.
Yeah, apparently that's a real disease.
Is it?
Yeah. Let me find that spot in my notes while you continue your thought.
Well, I was going to say, so I don't know if you... I mean, I'm sure you've seen... I know you've seen this movie, Young Frankenstein.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. You know, I was in the musical version of it, too.
Yeah. So when the inspector for that town has his arm, he's like...
Yeah. Because it's a robotic arm.
Yeah, it's like a prosthetic. So, like, that's... To me, that's what this guy kind of reminded me of. Like, that was the character, like, I kept seeing in my brain.
Yeah. Apparently, what it's called, I found it here, it is called agonistic apraxia. Which... layman's terms is alien hand syndrome, and it's caused by damage to the corpus callosum, which is the nerve fibers that connect the brain's two hemispheres. So the one arm actually does have a
life
mind
of
its own.
Yeah.
Now the fact that the life of its own chooses to go back to its Nazi roots is the part that I am very confused about with the choice for this character.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Peter Sellers, I mean, it's very interesting. I know you just started the cast list, but we're on Peter Sellers now. So Peter Sellers, he received the first ever Oscar nomination for Best Actor.
Really?
For someone that was playing multiple roles. It's the first time it had ever happened was this movie. I don't believe he won, though, if I remember correctly. But apparently, Stanley Kubrick, who is famous for having multiple takes, Peter Sellers was like, fuck that shit, I'm not doing that. And so instead, Stanley Kubrick had six cameras rolling, and Peter Sellers just did three different things. And, like, you know, basically dropped the mic and walked off.
Yeah, right? Just improvised most of his lines.
Yeah, he did his own thing. Kubrick loved him enough that it was like, yeah, when he, with his Dr. Strangelove stuff.
Yeah.
That's when it was like that was, yeah, he just had six different cameras going and he somehow spliced together three very different performances to make what you saw in the war room.
Very interesting.
Yeah. So, fucking Peter Sellers, man.
His three characters definitely were like the pivotal points of this movie. Like, because there's a conversation where President Merkin Muffley is on the phone with the Prime Minister of the Russian Prime, and he's just like, "I'm fine, you're fine, we can agree we're both fine, we can agree that it's fine that you're fine, I'm fine." Yeah. Well, I have something I need to talk. And he did such a good job.
Yeah,
with each of those characters, it was amazing.
Well,
it
all off. He was supposed to be, and, you know, I'll give you this as a segue to get back into, like, cast list, but he was also supposed to be Major King Kong, who was played by Slim Pickens, but he couldn't pull off, he wasn't comfortable with a Texas accent.
Interesting.
He couldn't pull off the Southern accent, so he's like, no. You know?
Interesting.
So, yeah, otherwise he would have been four roles, and instead they give it to Slim Pickens.
Well, good job, Slim Pickens. You killed it. Literally and figuratively. George C. Scott played General Buck Turgidson. Sterling Hayden was Brigadier General Jack D. Ripper.
That's Ripper. A little on the nose.
Yeah. Keenan Wynn was Colonel Bat Guano. It's just these names. It's a fever dream of names.
Yeah.
You were there, and you were there, and you were there. Slim Pickens, Major King Kong. Peter Bull was Russian Ambassador Alexei D. Sadesky.
Yeah, that doesn't feel like the most Russian name. So I'm wondering. I tried saying it a few different ways to figure out, like, was there a joke that I missed with his name, like Alexei de Sadesky.
When you're trying to figure out what somebody's license plate says.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. And then this is the one that threw me off, was the fact that James Earl Jones Lothar Zog.
His debut.
Yeah.
This is his debut movie. He was in a play. He was in Merchant of Venice with George C. Scott, and that's where Stanley Kubrick saw him and cast him in this movie. And so this is his debut film.
So wild seeing his name on this, because obviously he's so much younger in that you don't even recognize him.
So much younger.
He
doesn't even sound right.
Yeah, exactly. I don't really necessarily think we need to go through. There's not really too many other.
Well, you could name the only woman. Tracy Reed is Miss Scott.
True. Tracy Reed is Miss Scott. The buxom beauty in the general's quarters. Right.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, I mean, the one woman, as far as I can remember.
Yeah, I don't think there was another one.
No, not even, like, someone, like, serving tea in the war room or anything.
And that was the interesting thing that I wanted to say about this. Like, it all felt, like, it was all, like, so almost every single scene felt like it was, like, filmed or staged in this, almost, in, like, a silo. In an underground bunker. Like, I felt very, like, even the war room was dark.
Yeah, because that was supposed to be the Pentagon, correct?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's supposed to be, like, the inner sanctum of the Pentagon. So everything just felt, like, very closed up. And I think if that was Stanley Kubrick's intent, which I feel like it was, he did a very good job of it. Because you had all these, like, small little groups of people in these closed-off rooms that should be, and that's the satire right there, is they should be talking amongst each other, all these points of power.
Yeah.
No matter who's in charge, these are all points of contention and points of power, and they're all closed off.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really amazing. Whether it was just a locked door, or it was a war room, or it was, you know, eight guys in a you know, cylinder flying through the sky with two nuclear weapons. You know, just very well framed and very well, you know, like just portrayed.
It's like you have five different bottle episodes happening at the same time.
Exactly.
Yeah. And yeah, and I always love a well orchestrated bottle episode, like when it's something like Breaking Bad, or, you know, with the fly episode, or, you know,
you have to admit, like, despite, like, what anybody feels about Kubrick's sanity or his ability to, I don't know, tell a fluid story. He can set a scene and set an emotion, like, very well.
Yeah, he does that too, that well. And that's the thing, is I guess I haven't really come out and said it, because, you know, maybe I should save it for my final thoughts, but my view has changed on Dr. Strangelove. I still found it slow. Mm-hmm. Like, there were definitely parts that it could have done without. I don't think, you know, even the credits, I don't think needed to be quite so long. But that's Stanley Kubrick. He lingers on shit. So I'm, you know, still can't turn myself around on Stanley Kubrick, but with this movie, coming into it, realizing that it's supposed to be a comedy, you know, having 20 more years of life behind me, it's not too bad. I've grown on this. I appreciated it, and
yeah.
I definitely found the humor of it quite sharp and quite witty, and I enjoyed it. Yeah.
So I don't know if my military experiences have adjusted how I would have seen this like at a younger age. I'm pretty sure it has. Like, you know, knowing how systems within the government actually
peeking behind the curtain.
The peek behind the curtain. Yeah. It's funny
sausage
because
sausage
like,
is
you know,
made and all that.
Just so the audience knows, like, this movie is basically built upon the idea of a single point of failure bringing about the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So one
you know,
general
that old chestnut.
Yeah, that old chestnut. So this general believes that, you know, he's actually lost his sanity a bit, and he decides that he's going to go ahead and basically go against all policy and regulation and enact this mission type R, which is basically the code for, you know, go ahead and just every single plane head towards their target in Russia and bomb the shit out of them with all of our nuclear bombs. And
because we've been invaded.
Yeah, because that's the key part, because
the government has been invaded and the higher powers cannot stop this. Yeah, it's like we've got a Red Dawn situation happening.
Yes, and so basically the plane itself, so all of these small little like factions, the plane, the Pentagon, this base that this general is holed up in, they all become isolated. There's mm-hmm. there's no communication really within each other. There is some communication between like very little, which is funny because it's just funny. They throw in these little things like the president doesn't know the phone number to the Russian prime minister.
Yeah.
You know, so he's asking, you know, the like somebody in the room, he's like, who's got the phone number? Like, somebody get the phone number. Like, we only got 25 minutes to call these guys and you don't have the phone number. You know, you got this one general who's like, sir, you're going to bring in the enemy into our war room. They're going to see the big map. We got this big map.
The big map. That was one of my first, like, big LOLs. Like, actual out. Like, I'm like, the way that he kept gesturing towards the map.
Yeah.
He'll see the map.
He'll see the big map.
The big map.
And then there was like Slim Pickens,
yeah.
So you had Slim Pickens, who was just like this country, like, so that was the other thing that was kind of funny is like Slim Pickens is almost this country bumpkin who's a pilot of this B-52 bomber and literally in charge of the world's most like dangerous weapon.
Yeah,
and I think that right there was meant to be kind of funny also because he's just like talking in like this twang and he's like, we got to go over there and we got to, you know, like these Ruskies, we got to take care of the Ruskies, you know? And he's like, he's just this. And I think that was kind of supposed to be that interesting. How would you put that? Like,
juxtaposition.
Yeah.
Exactly.
The juxtaposition of having like some guy who anybody on the street would meet this guy. He'd have his cowboy hat on.
He's
like, this
Cletus.
Is,
yeah.
He's Cletus, but he's flying and escorting with his crew of young airmen the two most deadliest bombs on the planet, and it's just it's so wild to think about this setting because that's reality.
It
I'm
is.
Not gonna lie, that's true. Reality we have people in our military right now that are just people you would like meeting them, you'd be like, oh, you're not the straightest shooter, but they're in charge of like I mean we're kind of seeing some of it right now in the United States, which kind of sucks, you know, with some of these leakers as far as the sensitive items. But like, again, that's what makes this movie relevant.
Yeah. 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 And you've got a war room with a table full of stuff. The funny thing is I like the spread in that one. But the funny thing is with Slim Pickens is between takes, apparently Peter Sellers is like, oh yeah, see, he's got it so much better. He's still in character even. Mm-hmm. And it's like, no, that's just Slim Pickens. That's who he is. This is Slim Pickens as Slim Pickens, apparently, is what this movie is. So what a handle. You know, that's an interesting one to choose.
And that was one thing that was kind of
Pickens.
Was kind of interesting was I read that even though this movie was in black and white, the big tablecloth on the war room's table was green because they wanted all these guys to be sitting around it feeling like they were playing poker over the fate of the entire world.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting feeling because that is exactly what this movie turns into. It's like a strategy of how we can use either stop this or use it to our advantage.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, you know you're filming in black and white.
Yeah.
Like, why does it matter?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's the crazy of Kubrick, you know?
It's, those guys, to them, it wasn't black and white. They got to feel the moment. They got to feel the emotions. The other thing that was pretty hilarious was that General at one point is sitting at that table and his girlfriend, Tracy Reed or Miss Scott, mm-hmm. it calls him at the Pentagon, you know, and he's worried about the Russians seeing this big map, but his girlfriend has his phone at the table in the war room of the Pentagon.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's having to try to like de-escalate that situation at the same time.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
It's a movie full of juxtaposition. He's trying to de-escalate his girlfriend. Of course I care about you, baby.
I mean, and see, at first, like, it took me a moment because I was going into this movie with hatred, obviously, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, I wanted to have an open mind, but it's like, no, fuck this, Dr. Strangelove. And stupid long-ass title. and so I'm not wanting to like it at first, and, like, I'm trying to find things to pick apart, and I'm like, what's up with this scene where the lady is just yelling at him in the bathroom? I'm like, what a stupid fucking scene. But as the movie went on and I saw how hilarious, like, George C. Scott was in this movie, and, you know, and, my God, Peter Sellers, the president was my favorite Peter Sellers.
Yes.
That was definitely my favorite Peter Sellers. But as the movie went on, I'm like, oh, okay. I get that scene now. I get how funny it is he's just in the can. And his secretary, who was tanning a second ago on the bed, you know, is relaying everything back and forth. Like, it's just... like, at that point, it's like, oh, okay, I get what's going on. But at first, it's like, this is stupid. This is still stupid. I don't get it. Why? Yeah. But then I got it.
Yeah. And then, you know, as we proceed through the movie, you know, it's the government finally is able to. Okay, so let's we got to talk about the fact that there's a shootout. We get and because that's what happens is like, you know,
on American soil. Yeah.
On American soil. Like the general who causes this whole thing tells everybody at the base that, you know, the rest of the government is probably, you know, invaded. So anybody that comes to try and stop us from continuing our mission, shoot him and kill him and stop him from entering the base. So I don't know, pretty genius for a crazy guy.
Yeah.
We get
and I zoned out for a sec reading my own notes. Did you mention the taking away the radios too?
Yeah. Yes, they took. That was interesting. Yeah, I didn't mention that, but they had
so
the general had everybody turn in their radios because he said that those were what word did he use? They were. Basically just possibly
bugged maybe
bugged or, yeah like they're vulnerable to
oh
being,
yeah that yeah. that yeah I don't remember exactly myself but I like that's how he gets got is that oh wait no there's still civilian broadcast that wouldn't happen if Russia was here
exactly yeah. the smart British you know What was his name? Group Captain Lionel Mandrake. He figures out that there's something smelly going on, and so he confronts the general and ends up getting locked in the office with him. And they kind of have this one on one for the rest of the movie until you know finally the general goes into his bathroom and shoots himself.
Yeah, that was also I mean interesting.
Exactly.
I realized that I didn't think to look this up because it is something that, you know, the word comes up in Harry Potter as well, and I'm a big nerd for Harry Potter. A mandrake is the root of a plant. So I mean in the Harry Potter, of course, it's the creepy baby plants.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, that's the root of a plant. Historically derived either from plants of the genus Mandragora found in the Mediterranean region or from others, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so it's, yeah, it's, so Mandrake, I'm just wondering what the significance of naming this particular character Mandrake is. I mean, with in a movie full of bizarre names, like Jack D. Ripper makes sense to me because it's this man that's just going to kill everybody.
I'm going like, to go on a limb here.
Colonel Bat Guano, I don't know, but okay, you're
hear
you're,
me out. Lionel, Lion.
Yeah.
Mandrakes, their scream will paralyze you or turn you to stone. Okay. So Stone Lion.
Stone Lion. Okay, see, I can take that ride with you. I'm all in, right? Mm-hmm. Except for the, you know, the connection to the turning you to stone. I mean, the actual Mandrake shows nothing about that. I don't
oh, it
think
doesn't?
They're...
I thought the scream either paralyzed you or...
Well, no. In Harry Potter, it does.
Oh, okay.
But, no, like, in this case, a mandrake is the root of a plant. That is literally what a mandrake really is. I was just connecting it to Harry Potter because I'm a big nerd.
Okay. Yeah, but Lionel, I don't know.
I mean, I'm going to see Cursed Child when I'm in London, so.
Hermione's black.
Shit! Well, I can't have that. Fucking.
Can't see it now.
Hold on, I need to text my girlfriend now and tell her to get. Yeah, I know.
Cancel the trip. I just found out that Hermione's black. Shit,
yeah. Oh my god! Not that.
Oh man.
The only one that bugs me is when the math doesn't make sense to me. It's like if they cast white actors as her parents, that's when I get a problem, you know, have a problem with, you know, so I don't have a problem with, you know, whatever, fine. You know, if you want to have Lance Reddick as Zeus, whatever, I don't give a shit. But at least if we, you know, let's at least make some of the real people make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Morgan Freeman is God.
There you go. That works.
Oh, man. Let's see, what else? I mean, what do you got for me?
I mean, I guess Dr. Sex was in theaters at the same time, but I was surprised for a 1964 movie, the revealing bikini that Miss Scott was wearing. She was showing navel. That was unexpected for 1964.
Yeah. And not just the fruit.
Yeah. Naval orange, okay. Took me a minute there.
It is a military movie.
Yeah. Oh! There we
go. You're welcome. Yeah.
There we go. That's the one that mad. I like, what's his faces? I don't remember any of their names. I like General Buck. I like his binder that is named World Targets and Megadeths.
Yeah.
Yes.
The one he's carrying around when the Russian guy comes in.
Yeah. Oh, trying to hide. Trying to hide the big map.
Yeah. And then at one point, he's like, because we don't know if he actually planted that camera on the Russian guy.
Yeah.
We don't know that. But the Russian guy did, in fact, have a camera on him.
Did, in fact, have one. Yeah.
And he took pictures of the giant board,
the big map.
The big map.
Can't take a picture of the big map. Yeah, it was interesting, the reasoning for the one guy's meltdown about whatever, the brigadier captain or brigadier general or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his meltdown over the fluoride in the water.
Well, that's to this day is still a common conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Yeah. People think that the chemicals, like the fluoride and stuff that they're putting in our drinking water, is actually like meant to mind control us and like hide, you know. It's same thing with like chemtrails and solids.
Oh, so yeah. Did it start here, I wonder?
Maybe. I mean, that's a strong possibility, but then once again, like I'm saying, it's still a relevant movie.
True. Very true. Yeah. No, and that's yeah. Fluoride in water. I guess I didn't know that was a mind control one. But yeah, I wonder, if maybe it started here.
That's maybe it started strong here. Possibility.
Because apparently there was a government, like the U.S. government, took steps to make sure that this was not actually possible after this movie came out.
Of course they said that. Of course yeah, they said that.
We better go through and cross all our fancy sevens and dot all our lowercase j's. You know, make sure that this can't actually happen. So,
well, the funny thing is, like, the U.S. government dismissed that this could ever happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they actually showed the scene where Mandrake couldn't get a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
They showed that, in a session of Congress, and the members said it raised a legitimate question about whether we could get crucial information to the right people during a nuclear crisis.
That was another great scene, too.
That was, awesome. He's like, give me the quarter.
Yeah, I'm like, oh my god, yes, he's calling him collect. He's calling the president collect. I loved it.
But it's also, again, we talk about the juxtaposition of these scenes, and you have this young soldier that is holding this high level officer, like, you know, at gunpoint, mm-hmm. and he doesn't know what's going on. He's just a soldier, like, doing his job.
Yeah.
Trying to hold this guy as, you know, like a prisoner. And the Mandrake, who has information, cannot make the call. He can't get in contact with anybody. So the one person that is close enough to his superiors to get the information doesn't have it, but the guy who has the information can't get in touch with his superiors.
Yeah.
It's so funny, again, how each of these things just reaches it's this quintessential like peak of just being comparatively ridiculous.
Yeah. And then of course, like, does lend itself to one of the funniest moments in the movie, where he wants to shoot the Coke machine to get quarters, you know, and you're going to have to answer to the Coke Corporation.
Yeah. and then we get a slapstick moment where he actually shoots it.
Yeah.
And he gets sprayed in the face with soda.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But, you know, there's not very many in this movie, so now's a good time to talk about Sponsorship Corner. Yeah, always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, is brought to you by, the title's longer than the sponsor list, IBM Computers, Playboy Magazine, and Coca-Cola. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. I broke Aaron over there. What's going on?
Oh,
what's
man, going on, buddy?
The title being longer?
I did not expect the Playboy.
You turned into a 12-year-old boy.
I did.
Yeah. So, in the war room, there's the one guy that sits next to the president. I don't know how well you remember him, but he reminded me of Mo from The Simpsons. Was there anyone that gave you, like, real-life Mo vibes?
I gotta look up a picture of this.
Looks-wise?
Yeah, because I feel like I saw this guy, and I'm like,
I mean, like, wow. The president I so didn't know was Peter Sellers at first as well.
Same.
That one had me fooled. That one was my favorite one.
It's funny because if you go on IMDb, they actually have pictures of the scenes in color, which is kind of off-putting.
Yeah. You know, another thing I love was, like, the phone calls were brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like what great monologues, but listen, Dimitri, listen, if it wasn't a friendly call, you wouldn't have gotten it.
He's so passive.
Yeah. Well, how do you think I feel, Dimitri?
Yeah.
Yeah, but how do you think I feel? I feel terrible, Dimitri. Like, oh my god. It was a very funny movie. I will give it that it's a very funny movie. But I don't get Doctor Strangelove. Out of everything, that's the one character that it's just like, don't understand where this guy comes from.
I just found the picture of that guy, and he does look exactly like Mo from The Simpsons. Yeah. Oh my God, it's uncanny.
If you did an AI brush over on Mo, that's what you would end up with, is that guy. Yeah.
So good.
Wow, we created AI, and let's start using it to make fantasy pictures out of real photos.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to do the normal thing that humans do. We're going to use it to make big boobs that we can stare at.
Yeah, pretty much. I understand the purpose of having this crazy scientist in the room, that it's like, okay, he explains the doomsday device and how it works, and he also brings up the idea of hiding everyone underground in the mines.
Oh yeah.
But I don't understand the choice with the hand, and I mean,
so, okay, the only reason I was thinking, for some reason in my mind, it flashed like this guy somehow experimented on himself to make, like, I don't know, to like, I make like his, maybe he sewed on the right arm of Hitler or something. I don't know.
Oh, okay. We've got like an idle hand situation going on.
Yeah.
Okay.
But to me, like, it almost made it feel like Dr. Strangelove might have, like, antagonize this whole thing from the beginning.
Yeah.
Because in the end, it was in order for him to get everybody down into the mines so that he could continue experimenting.
Maybe. Okay. You went much deeper than I ever did. I'm just like, no, this guy is... I don't quite understand everything. Like, I liked some of it, but I didn't understand everything that was going on. Like, and like, the thing that baffles me the most, and I mean, I know we may not be finished with our discussion yet, but I'm going to jump to the very end where it's like he gets up and he can walk.
Mein Führer.
And then it cuts to all the mushroom clouds. But it's like, I don't understand the abrupt cut. Like, I can understand that, okay, like, the doomsday device went off anyway. That's why all the mushroom clouds. But I don't understand the way it ends and the way it cuts. That's when he's full on crazy Third Reich going on right there. Like, I just, that's where I stop being invested in that character. I'm like, okay, no, I'm done with you. That's enough Dr. Strangelove.
Again, I would almost believe that his evolution as a character in this movie was all premeditated. And because if you think about this, he started suggesting that the only people that should go down into the caves were people that could procreate and had good genes.
Yeah, and a ratio of like 8 to 1.
Exactly. So, yeah. a scientist in a wheelchair may not be chosen to go down into the mines.
Okay.
If he can walk. And also, people don't necessarily see somebody in a wheelchair as a threat.
Yeah.
And so, again, it might have been a cover. I'm just saying, that's where my brain goes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, you are seeing some layers that I hadn't considered. So
I'm looking at this like Shrek.
Yeah, like, yeah, onions, exactly. Yeah. But and
parfaits.
In the typical Kubrick fashion, there are always meanings to the most mundane of things. Like a green tablecloth that no one's ever going to know is green except the actors. You know, things like that. But, like, I mean, Shining has a bunch of, like, you know, suggestive and metaphorical things in there, and
oh yeah, that movie was, I mean, you know,
mirrors
movie was
that mean
crazy
things and stuff, yeah, like that. Like, you know, it's just there's always something means something when it comes to Kubrick, so it's like, yeah, okay, well, I guess this is probably no exception.
Apparently he helped film the moon landing, you know.
Oh, exactly, yeah, because of all the extra shadows. The Mythbusters though showed how it would actually be possible to be like a They showed how you could fake it, I think. Yeah, was what it was. Yeah. I just didn't get him. There is the moment where George C. Strop falls by accident. And that was an actual accident.
Perfectly executed.
Yeah. But they did not. Yeah, Stanley Kubrick didn't know that he did that. He thought it was like a choice.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay.
So I actually really did enjoy that scene.
Yeah. Like just how he becomes more and more unhinged as it goes on, because no one is listening to him.
Mm-hmm.
But I just like how he's so matter of factly, like, you know, well, there's the problem with that. See,
yeah.
See, you'd think that would be the answer. You know, like he was doing a lot of that. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got a point.
Yeah.
About the mines.
Yeah. 8-1, you say. Huh?
We got to preemptively strike the Ruskies.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. He's like, oh, we might as well. We might as well go all in on it.
I mean, that's a, kind of a, the typical mindset of, well, like, the general is like, how can we use this strategy to our benefit? And it's like, well, if we go down to the mines, the Russians could potentially strike us first. We should strike them first before they strike us.
Yeah.
And then we go down to the mines just to save our butts and procreate with 8 women.
And that's, but it also sets up the other very funny moment of the fact that they hadn't announced the Doomsday Machine yet.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, we were gonna talk about that on Monday or whatever,
yeah.
Right?
It's yeah, like, the timing.
So you have this thing that could destroy the world, but you haven't told anybody that you have it. So, you know,
that's the funny the device, the Doomsday device that doesn't need to be armed or, you know, like, you know, executed. It just it'll execute by itself. It'll detonate by itself because somebody didn't stop it.
Yeah.
Or try to stop it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it'll either explode because somebody tried to stop it, or it'll explode because somebody attacked them.
Yeah.
Either way, again, we talk about the whole mad theory, mutually assured destruction. You know, where we're just going to end up killing our entire human species by nuclear weapon anyways.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, still relevant.
Still
you
relevant.
Keep saying it. Still relevant. Yeah. Oh, wait, it's 10-1. Not 8-1.
Yeah, 10-1.
Yeah. Okay, how many of those planes were shot down?
They said potentially four.
Four.
But then they realized that only three of them, and then we had the last plane. So this, you know...
So there are still like a few dozen or a dozen casualties or so, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But I guess you're gonna save everyone by doing that. But meanwhile, on the airplane, I mean, that's something that we haven't even really talked that much about, except for Slim Pickens. But I mean, we get a lot of big moments from James Earl Jones as well. Finally, he gets his big scene when, yeah, you know, they are flying very low. He's just steering it like a car.
That was the funniest thing, was like the screen, the background screen that was just like this plane moving on like a three-dimensional axis with the same scenery moving around in the background.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because we have the whole part, which is probably the most famous part of this movie. If you know anything about this movie, you probably know the guy riding the nuke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I obviously saw it coming because I knew it was going to happen, but I never really understood why he was riding it backwards.
Mm.
But
I don't think he was meant to stay on it, right?
Yeah, he definitely wasn't.
Yeah, okay.
He definitely wasn't meant to ride that thing down, but the fact that he owned it till the very end, you know, that guy was a true patriot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
a true patriot.
Yeah. Now, being a military man, when it came to like the way that they received the orders, I know there's certain things you probably can't talk about, but like the idea of each person in the plane having a separate thing when it comes to like a top secret rarely used order, is that how it would be? Everybody has their own orders, their own checklist, so that it's like, Like, are any of them like the Joker, where it's like, hey, or like the Dark Knight, where it's like, yeah, I'm the one that's supposed to kill the bus driver?
I mean, like, not necessarily. I mean, generally, like a crew like that. So in situations like that, especially in aircraft, everybody really has to know everybody else's job. And this is not just in aircraft. This is pretty much in any kind of small knit unit. Everybody's got to know each other's jobs, because if for some reason that plane were flying and it did get hit with enemy fire like it did, and somebody in a specific important job was injured, somebody else has to be able to step in and do that person's job. So when it comes to, like, maybe the secret, like, I mean, I don't see that as being very realistic. Maybe at some point that could have been, like, a realistic, you know, operating parameter. But, no, I don't see that ever being, like, something that would happen. Because, like I said, everybody's got to be able to do, like, somebody else's job. There's always got to be a primary and an alternate.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm even thinking about, like, the little basket full of envelopes, where it's like, okay, well, we have to flip through this, pull out the R, rip it open, hand out, you know, it was that whole aspect of it where it's just like, you know, it's interesting that could also have been something that was somewhat accurate in 1964, the idea of, like, the little dial code.
It had to come from somewhere, and, you know, like,
okay,
yeah,
lock code, yeah.
Like, nowadays, you'll see, like, a lot of people, I mean, even a lot of civilian companies do it. When they have to log on to a system, they have, like, a little, like, randomizer that, like, fits usually on their lanyard, and it'll have, like, a random code for whatever day they're doing. They press the button, it gives them new code. They can log into whatever system they have to use for work. I mean, we see that a lot, you know, just at really any company that has any measure of security.
Yeah. I don't know. Technology's starting to scare me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
I was in Seattle in the fall and got my first taste of an Amazon store.
Oh, yeah, those are freaky.
I went to a Kraken game, and so the concession was an Amazon store, where you scan your credit card when you go in and walk out with whatever you want, and you get charged.
Yep, that's a scary thing.
Yeah, terrifying. Terrifying. Yeah, so, I mean, ultimately, I guess the world blows up in the end, though, is the moral of the story, right?
Yep. It's going to happen, mutually assured destruction. It's just how our shitty, like, world leaders are going to deal with it.
Yeah, and how soon. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Oh, boy. So, Aaron, on IMDb, it scored 8.4 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 97. Whew, that's a big one. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 98% on the tomato meter. Those critics love it more, and an audience rating of 94. But, Aaron, those are just numbers. Like a George C. Scott falling down in the war room. Hit us with some reviews.
There's, like, so generally, again, like you said, Rotten Tomatoes, very high scores.
Very.
98% on the tomato meter, 94% on the audience score. You got Peter Bradshaw, who says, age has not withered that final queasy nightmare of the mushroom clouds. Set to Vera Lynn's hopeful We'll Meet Again, underscoring how the certainties of the Second World War cease to hold their meaning in the nuclear age.
Oh, yeah, that is definitely the detail that I failed to mention. Yeah, I left that out, the fact that the music choice for the ending, that was...
Yes. That was James Powers from The Hollywood Reporter says, Kubrick has shown before that he is a director of rare gifts. Dr. Strangelove brings them into full realization. So, I mean, those are all fairly positive. Let me find a negative one, which, I'm going to be honest, is difficult.
Must be hard,
it's
yeah.
It's very difficult. There's I have to scroll quite far, and the first one that I finally found is a 5 out of 10, and it says, very funny in parts, but sadly, not all of this worked for me. Sorry, dude. You know, Jimbo53186511. But this didn't all work for you. But he said Dr. Strangelove is a film that is sitting high up in the IMDb top 250 films. It's currently sitting at number 49 on the list, and therefore it's clearly a film that is generally loved by the public. The critics also have strong liking for this film. I personally found this film a little uneven, if I am honest. He goes on to say things like, I don't know where this film is at its strongest. I must admit he definitely was at his best as the German weapons researcher. So this guy obviously didn't know what he's talking about, because literally Dr. Strangelove, okay?
Yeah.
The soldier then utters the line,
literally,
if you don't...
the titular character, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
He said the soldier then utters the line, if you don't get through the president, you'll end up in... if you don't get through to the president, you'll end up in trouble with Coca-Cola. A very funny exchange. But and he says, Dr. Strangelove isn't a bad film, but it's a very uneven film that was both very funny and very tedious. Unfortunately, the good and the bad pretty much cancel each other out, hence the score out of 5, or 5 out of 10. So, Jimbo 5318-6511, with a screen name just as long as this movie's title, you're an idiot.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, with all the other Simpsons references I've dropped today, you know, Jimbo, fuck you. I mean, because Jimbo's a dummy.
Yeah.
There we go. So, right on. Yeah, is that all you got? That's probably it.
Everything
reviews,
else is like 10 out of 10s and 9 out of 10s.
Yeah.
I don't even feel like scrolling. My hands are tired.
Fair enough. Right on. So, yeah, I mean, a high score movie. Okay, I'm going to start with my negatives.
Okay.
Okay.
Talk to me, Goose.
I will say that it was still slow at moments. You know, I still can't get over the Kubrick of it all. That is one of his trademarks, is slow as fuck at moments. And the other problem I had is I didn't really like the Dr. Strangelove of it all either. I could have done without Dr. Strangelove and enjoyed the movie just as much, if not more. Because I don't think the character was necessary. One of the Mo Sizlak sitting next to the president could have been the guy to suggest the mines. You know, the Russian ambassador could have known more about what the 93-year nuclear bubble is going to look like. So, I mean, Dr. Strangelove wasn't needed. You could have maybe reduced Peter Sellers' workload a little bit. I didn't like Dr. Strangelove. There were some things about him that I liked, but then it was like, no, that's enough of you.
Yeah. What a hater.
I liked the rest of the movie, though. I will say that. I thoroughly enjoyed George C. Scott's rants. I enjoyed Peter Sellers as the president so much. So much. He was so funny in those phone calls.
Yeah.
I was into it when it was funny. I appreciate this movie. I've been fortunate. You know, you brought me a flaming turd, and we weren't able to turn our minds around on that flaming turd. But so far, I've softened on one, and I can actually say I enjoyed myself in this one. This was a pretty good movie. I'm not going to be in the 90s, but I have turned on this movie, and except for the two things I hated at the top of this rant, everything else I thought it was funny, and as we've mentioned several times, still relevant today, so it didn't feel as dated as you'd think a 1964 movie would.
Yes.
Aaron, and I'm gonna bring us home. Yeah,
yeah. And I'm gonna say the same thing. I'm just gonna to echo what you're saying. I pretty much said the same exact thing at the beginning of the show that I'm gonna say now, is that the relevancy of this film still being applicable to modern issues and modern topics and modern conflicts, mm-hmm, is still very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. The satirical humor, as it applies to a lot of things that are still going on, and it, once again, is applicable and relevant. You know, I really appreciate. This is a film that I can appreciate what a Kubrickism can be.
What you want a Kubrick to be. Like, this, yes. This is, yeah, for me, like, the Kubrick of it all, it's borderline Kubrick. It isn't as Kubrick as some Kubrick is.
Yeah.
So,
Kubrick, yeah. Kubrick, Kubrick.
It's Kubrick light. Yeah,
Kubrick. You know?
Kubrick light.
But yeah, I, like I said, I very much enjoyed watching this. I'm I'm pleasantly surprised with it. I had a good time with it, and I'm glad that I got the opportunity to talk about this with you on this show.
It was a fun ride. This was a good one. Yeah. So, I mean, that would be my word of advice. If when you were younger, you watched this movie once and said, that's a stupid movie, you know, now that you've grown up a bit more, watch it again, because
you might change
your mind. Give it a chance. This is one that comes out of the, I used to hate this one.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. In the words of ABBA, take a chance on me. You know?
Take a chance. Yeah. I can't. I tried to do the bass line, but no.
Take a chance.
Yeah. The Office with Andy doing that. Still one of the greatest renditions of that song. Well, there we go. That is Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. And that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. If you want to help us out on the business end, one thing you can do for us is, well, you know, just tell people. Tell your friends, and then no, tell two friends, and then tell them to tell two friends.
I like how you phrased that business end.
On the business end, yeah. Well, it's all business over here. Yeah, the party's in the back. Don't you know that?
Yeah, like a good mullet.
Oh wait, so this is the party back here. Yeah, the business was in the front.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is the party. No, just tell people. Yeah, come join the party.
Yes.
That's what. Yeah, spread it. Spread that word of mouth.
Like some cheeks. I don't know.
I don't know why I bought
I'm
into
sorry.
That too. Yeah,
I
don't
I'm
know
sorry. Why, yeah, I but, take it all back.
Or go over to whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars. Give us 5 of them. A little review.
Cinco.
Yeah, tell us your favorite sandwich. Give us a 13-word review in honor of this 13-word title.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that could be the review, is the 13-word title.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Or if you want to become a producer of the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. And, you know, support us. Help us keep the show running. And you even get a shout-out because you are now an executive producer, just like Joshua Blum over at the 13th Hour Podcast.
And if you want to contact or donate to the show, you can email us at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com.
Yeah. I put that in there, and it's like one-time donation, you know, if you want to like PayPal us or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just like a tip.
Throw a shekel or something our way.
Just the tip.
You can also follow us on social media. I used to like this one on Instagram, or I used to like this one on Twitter.
Yeah, see, it's hard to convey that in an audio format.
I had fun doing that one, though.
Yeah,
I emphasize the two and the one.
The one. Yeah. Oh, yes, you even made sure to get that that little-known silent H in there.
Yeah. One.
Or, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. On social media, you'll get the heads up with our next movie, so you can watch it ahead of time and just follow along with the show.
Yeah. Or, you know, like I mentioned, I'll do the rest of it first, yeah, because then we do our little thing, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't even know if people listen to the end. You know, I like to make the credits different, but I don't even know if people listen to the credits, so whatever.
It's a little spicy once I get to the end.
Okay, so here we go. I Used to Like This One is created by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is hosted and produced by Sean Wells and Aaron Knowles. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals. Anywhere you listen to music, you should be listening to them. Man, they're funky. And if you want to hear more about me and my stories of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. And Aaron, where can people find you?
You can find me at the Oblivion Bar Podcast, and you can check us out on all social media platforms, Oblivion Bar Pod at, you know, whatever. You can also check me out and my nonprofit, which actually just started a GoFundMe today. That's at Shred the Stress on every profile or every platform. Yeah, I don't know if it's a profile, but well, anyways.
When does your GoFundMe close, actually? Because, like, we're recording this in May. This is coming out in June.
It doesn't close. I'm going to keep going until I raise all the money. I'm trying to raise $5,000 here for a trailer for my nonprofit so I can get more equipment to help out more veterans and military personnel and just the military community. So go check that out, and I appreciate any help. Even if you can't donate, a share is all I ask.
Yeah, get a fucking cool hoodie.
Oh, yeah, I got to do that for you.
I still want to get one of those hoodies. Yeah, I like that hoodie. Pretty badass hoodie. I'm Canadian. I need a hoodie. So now this hate train is, like, pulling into the station. We got one more hated movie left, Aaron.
Yes.
This one's your turn. So
Animal House.
Animal House. Okay.
Yeah.
So now Animal House, like, you, like, straight up hate it, or it's just, it's one that you just, eh.
It's one that I've never liked. Like, okay. I've tried watching portions of it, and I just can't get into it.
Cool. Animal House. Nice. I look forward to it, because it's Same. From the year I was born. So there we go.
Awesome.
Yeah. It'll be, like, our third oldest movie. Because I think the, I forgot about Blazing Saddles, so fourth oldest movie. Yeah, Blazing Saddles, Willy Wonka, and Dr. Strangelove. There we go, Mulder. See? Yeah, see, I tie it all together with Dr. Strangelove. There we go, see? Just tied up the end of the episode. Look at that. It's like I've done this 150 times or something, I don't know.
Gotta be some kind of a record.
Well, there we go. Thank you for listening, and join us next week when we look at Animal House on I Used to Hate. I used to like this one. Oh, no. Now it sounds like I said I used to hate. I used to like this one.
Oh, no.
Yeah, next time on I Used to Like This One. There we go. Oh.
The date is January 29th. Actually, let me start over, because I want to do this in, like, a radio guy's voice. The date is January 29th, 1964, and we are watching Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.